The first poo... That worked out well.
This is why you're supposed to record it ahead of time, numped a lot, by the way.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Season 1, Episode 13 of the legendary Bad Voltage podcast. I'm here with some of my delightful friends, Mr. Brian Lunduke. Say hello.
Hello, everybody.
Mr. Stuart Ian Langridge. Say hello. Right. And Mr. Jeremy Barbara Garcia. Say hello.
Hello.
Good job, Barbara.
All right, so what are we talking about in the show? We're going to... just to kick things off, I just want to tell you about a segment I'm very excited about. We're going to be doing The Weakest Geek. This is going to be our very first quiz that we've had on the show with a very special guest as a quiz master.
In the last episode, the other three, and not me, discussed the unfolding Brendan Eich saga, and at least one of them predicted that it would all die away. Well, it massively hasn't died away, and we're going to talk about the second half of what's been happening.
And Jonna will review the game Battlefield 4 for us, much to Stuart's chagrin.
And then we are going to continue our award-winning segment, Breaking Down the Bullshit, where we talk about wearable technology.
And then finally, we're going to get into a bit of a community recap. We're going to talk about some stuff that's going on in the Bad Voltage community, and we're going to go through some of your emails. So, Jeremy, what is it time for right now?
And now, Bad Voltage.
Welcome to our very first Weakest Geek competition. Now, for those of you who don't know how this works, this is an idea that we have completely stolen from the Southern California Linux expert. We're not even going to try and beat around the bush here. We nicked this directly. Basically, what we're going to do, if you've seen The Weakest Link, if you were around 10 years ago and you saw The Weakest Link, it's basically that, but applied to nerds. So what we're going to do is the four of us are going to be playing. We're going to get asked a question, and then we'll each answer, and then at the end of each round, we're going to vote somebody off one by one, okay? And we'll be able to hear all the other votes so we can screw with each other as well. Same thing's going to happen for the second round for the three presenters. And then for the third round, with the final two people, each one of those people will get two questions, and then they will be decided on how well they answer those questions. There'll be a winner and a loser. The winner will get to choose what the loser has to say at the beginning of every sentence in the next segment on the show, and what they have to change the avatar to on the forums. Okay? So that's the basic notion of how this works. Now, of course, we need a question master general, and we talked about who's going to be the very best person to ask awkward questions with a biting sarcasm. And we couldn't think of anybody else better than the Right Honorable Reverend Matthew Garrett. How are you doing, Matthew?
Good to be here as always, Jono.
Okay. All right, so let's get into round one. You get to choose each person one by one and ask them a question, so take it away.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, well, let's get on with this. Jeremy.
Yes?
In the film Sneakers, what did the magic box make possible?
Having never seen Sneakers.
We're off to a good start.
No, yeah. Man, am I allowed to buzz in on questions? Well, I'm going to get something about some 1970s HP disk drive or something.
I'm going to go with Made Possible, Ginger Singing in the Shower to AC/DC.
Well, it's close, but unfortunately, the correct answer was to break all American cryptography systems.
Nearly.
Oh,
yeah.
No points. Yeah. No points for Jezza.
Good enough this time. Brian.
Oh.
Keeping on the cinematic role, name the virus that appeared in the movie Hackers.
I have no freaking clue. Angelina Jolie.
You people are all culturally ignorant.
Oh yeah, culturally ignorant about the film Hackers. Was that the one where everyone was on
rollerblades? In his defense, that sounds like a terrible virus.
The answer, as should be obvious, is the Da Vinci virus.
That should be obvious now that you say that. I should immediately know that regardless of whether I've seen the movie or not. It's just clear. You're right.
Yeah.
My bad.
If you haven't seen the movie, then you should really go and see the movie.
I know. It's my fault. I'm really sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
Call yourself you a journalist.
I am.
Stuart.
Yep.
This seems an appropriate question for you.
Oh, dear.
About pies.
Universe, what distinguished evil Spock from good Spock?
He had a beard.
He did have a beard.
Yes!
Oh, very nicely done.
Would also have accepted he was evil.
Yeah, he was the bad guy from the Mirror Universe. Excellent.
You're a dork.
Jono, yeah. Nice straightforward one for you. Linux 3.0 had a code name. What was it?
Linux 3.0. Was it Project Topaz?
I see I what you did there.
You see
it
what
was
I did there?
Not. The answer was Sneaky Weasel. So, at the end of the first round, the only person showing any vague ability whatsoever is...
Yes. Yes, it is.
Damn it.
And if all the right. rest of you could now... make your votes. We'll
all
go
right.
in order.
Who wants?
I will. Okay. We'll go in fact, reverse order. Jono, your vote for the weakest geek.
Stuart.
What? I got a point!
Stuart.
So it works, pal.
Remember that if you vote for yourself, it will not be possible for you to play second, and therefore you will not suffer.
Oh, Matthew Garrett, you're such a hero. I vote for me.
Hang on.
Well, I'm obviously not going to vote for heck now because I'm keeping you in this to come in second. So I'm going to go, John.
Sorry, what was that, Brian?
That was Jeremy who jumped past me.
Oh, I did. I went out of order.
Now I know what Jeremy's going with. You know what? I'm going with Jono.
Okay, so Jeremy.
Yay!
Who did you vote for then?
I voted out of order for Jono.
Okay, so it's a tie between Stuart and Jono. Well, this is unfortunate. We didn't actually
our rules did not account for a tie, did they?
Do this situation. Yeah.
Isn't well, that I don't think that he can vote for himself. I don't think that he can vote for himself. That seems...
No. That's... I'm going to
ask a tiebreaker here.
Yeah.
One moment.
Hang on. Do we want to get the tiebreaker right or wrong?
I'm not telling you that.
All right, Jono has to go first.
Okay.
Okay. No, it's one question, and this is clever. Aim here is that I'm going to ask a question where the answer is a number. You are both going to give me a number, okay. And the closest number wins. And the question is... what was the 4-digit part number of the original IBM PC, Stuart?
You see, right, because now I don't know whether I want to be close or not.
I'm not telling you what it is.
I'm going to assume that I want to be closest, and therefore my guess is 8086.
Okay, Jono.
Damn it. 8087.
So, that was clever tactical thinking. The answer was, in fact, 5150.
We both suck, okay.
The result, Stuart, you are the weakest geek.
Yes!
Oh.
Right, I'll sit out for the remaining rounds, then you guys have fun.
I was really looking forward to going head-to-head against you at the very end there. Oh, wow.
I was not wanting that outcome. All right.
Round two.
Jeremy, Brian, and Jono remain.
Yes.
Jeremy.
Yes.
Name the popular Linux-related podcast based in the UK, launched in 2004, and spawning an international series of conferences.
Ha 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 ha.
Lug Radio.
Well done. Brian.
Yeah.
Richard Stallman appreciates staying in houses where he gets to spend time with a particular kind of animal, but does not wish you to purchase an animal of this kind as a pleasant surprise for him. What kind of animal?
That would be a parrot.
That would parrot.
That would.
We're doing much better. Okay, Jono. Question yes. for you. How many Star Wars movies are there?
Now, are we talking about blockbuster movies? We're talking about the main movies,
John,
right?
Just answer the question.
All right. I'm going to go with 6.
Nope, the answer is 3. Jono, you scored 0 in that round. Jeremy, you scored 1. And Brian, you scored 1. So this time, in forward order, I will take the votes for who you wish to see ejected. So, Jeremy, your vote.
Because I had to say Lug Radio, I vote for myself.
Okay. Brian.
You know what? I'm going to vote for Jeremy as well because I really want to make Jono do something embarrassing.
Cool. Jono.
Brian.
Oh, throwaway vote there. Nice job.
So, Jeremy, with 2 votes for you, I'm afraid that you are the weakest geek in this round.
He looks crushed.
I'm sure. Well, now we move on to Brian and Jono for the final round. And in this round, I will ask each of you 2 questions, and then afterwards, I will make an entirely unbiased decision of my own as to who is the winner and who is the loser.
I wonder how this is going to work out, by the way.
So, Brian.
Yeah.
Which noted AIDS denialist, Firefox boycotting, open source gun enthusiast made threats towards Bruce Perens and wrote The Cathedral and the Bazaar?
You really should have left it at like the first 2. I think that
best question.
That would be Sir Eric Raymond.
It was indeed Sir Eric Raymond. Jono.
Yeah.
Which noted, charming, intelligent, and handsome open-source figure recently won the Free Software Foundation Award for the advancement of free software?
I don't know the answer to that question.
What?
Let's go for Bradley Coon.
I'm afraid the answer was, in fact, Matthew Garrett.
I don't believe it.
This isn't looking good for you, Jono.
It never is.
It was really disrespectful, Jono. I'm kind of ashamed right now.
Brian.
Yeah.
Final question for you.
Lay it on me, man.
Who drew the original version of Tux the Penguin as included in the Linux kernel source code?
Oh, I wish I could have got that one.
Oh, crap. I'm just going to go with Linus himself, because I don't actually know.
Unfortunately not. It was Larry Ewing.
Larry Ewing.
I knew that one.
Jono.
Yep.
A related question. Which animal took the place of Tux the Penguin for version 2.6.29?
Oh, I remember...
Was it a warty warthog?
It better not have been.
I remember something about this. I don't know. Let's go for a warty warthog. That makes sense.
Jono,
in a completely nonsensical way.
The answer was obviously a Tasmanian devil.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So, at the end of the final round, Brian scores 1, Jono scores 0, and refused to call me charming, handsome, and intelligent. So I'm now going to consider who should lose.
Jono, why is there a sword hanging by a thread just above your head?
After careful consideration, Brian, you are not the weakest geek. Jono, you are.
Oh, yeah.
No, this is not good.
Oh, man, that tastes sweet, guys.
You know what?
Sweet. Delicious
and
sweet.
The only consolation I've got here is that it's not Ak who's picking what I have to say.
I would just like to
given
point
the
out,
comments last in the last episode about the shower, I'd be a bit worried. About
that. I would like to point out that as we were playing through this, without any doubt at all, I am the gentleman on the panel with the least amount of actual knowledge. I just would like to point that out. But my charm saved the day. All right, so I get to choose whatever I want Jono to say. Now, this is at the beginning of every sentence you say, or at the end?
At the beginning.
Okay.
And you get to choose an avatar as well.
And I get to choose an avatar as well. Now, will I send you this avatar or make you go pick one of my liking kind of a thing?
You can send me one if you want. If you really want to get... Okay.
All right. The avatar is going to be pretty straightforward. We're going to go very, very simple. It's not so much to shame you as to promote a genuinely great family program. You are definitely going to be the current My Little Pony from Friendship is Magic, the one with the nice little unicorn and the purple flowers, because that one's the most adorable.
I like how you're differentiating different My Little Ponies.
We're gonna ignore that and move on immediately. Now, as for what you say, I would like to focus all of your sentence around veganism. I think that you focusing on specific vegetables you want to eat at the beginning of every thought you have is important. So I'm thinking you have to start every sentence with, gee, I could go for some kale. Straightforward, man. Okay. See that? No libel of anything in there.
Gee, I could go for some kale. Okay.
Right.
Deal.
Done.
So we'll hit that in the next segment. So, big thank you to Matthew Garrett. Thank you for coming on and provide fantastic questions.
As I said, it's a pleasure. Taking the opportunity to embarrass you is something I will always find time for.
Why
thank
change
you
that
very much,
life,
Matthew? We, those people listening to this will hopefully have learned a great deal from the questions.
All right. So, without further ado, thank you, Matthew, Free Software King of the Year, or whatever the hell you are right now. And that was The Weakest Geek.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
So there's been a whole thing with Brendan Eich and Mozilla recently. Now, we talked about this last week on Bad Voltage. Well, specifically, we didn't talk about it. Those three talk about it. And as far as I can tell from community.badvoltage.org, they just fucked it up in every possible way. So
well, you,
given
you
the fact
been
that
there.
The story has moved on since then, and given the fact that I'm now here, we present Eich to Eich Harder. So the important thing that's happened since we had this discussion last time is Brendan Eich has stepped down and left Mozilla. What do you guys think?
Gee, I could go for some kale. I think it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, in my mind, he was clearly, I don't know this, but I think he was clearly asked to step down because this became, you know what, Brian, you were right. Like, we talked about what we thought was going to happen here, and I thought it was going to blow over, and it didn't blow over at all.
Not even a little bit.
It turned into a big thing.
Just to stick by that, it's not done.
I think it's going to get worse from here, actually.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I could go for some kale. I think one of the things about... One of the things about it was that...
See, that does. So it feels right, doesn't it?
well, one of the things that's ridiculous about this in my mind is that Mozilla are now opened up to attack from both areas because on one hand, I think some people are happy the fact that he was asked to step down because they see that as a protection of civil rights for Mozilla employees, whatever. But on the other hand, I think some people are seeing it as Mozilla bending to internet bullying. And
Hang on. Your assumption there is that this is anything to do with Mozilla. Certainly the way it's been presented, I have no comment on whether it's the truth or not, but certainly the way it's presented is that it was a personal decision by Brendan to step down from being CEO and then to leave Mozilla itself. You saying, oh, it's Mozilla bending to bullying or whatever, suggests that he was... he either jumped before he was pushed or he was specifically asked to step aside.
It doesn't matter. It truly doesn't matter if Mozilla pushed him or not. The Mozilla board of directors could have been going, no, Brendan, no, don't go, buddy. And it doesn't matter. The fact is it's all marketing and image at this point. The Mozilla team haven't done a very good job of getting ahead of this story. Brendan himself didn't do a very good job of getting ahead of the story. So really... everyone just comes out looking terrible in it, and their communication so far has been short, blunt, and really
not very informative.
Kind of tone deaf as well. Exactly. So it doesn't matter.
No, I think this whole incident speaks very poorly of the Mozilla board in general, from my view. The fact that A, they didn't see it coming, and B, when it came, they handled it about as bad as you could handle it. I don't think you could have handled it worse if you tried.
I think what you said, Jeremy, is totally right from the point of view of someone handling public relations. I think that we need to be clear. This doesn't really speak to the Mozilla board in any way other than public relations. From my point of view, they could be doing a great bang up job in all other ways. I think that their public relations side of things just totally just fell down flat on its face and bloodied its nose on the asphalt on this one. But otherwise, I'm not ready to jump on the board and say Mozilla is having other problems.
Gee, I could go for some kale. I think the thing is that the. It doesn't really, like, to Brian's point, it doesn't really matter whether he stepped down or whether he was asked to step down. The point is, he couldn't function as a CEO with what happened. And I think that the issue that I pointed out still stands in the sense of, I think, irrespective of what anybody says, some people view it as him stepping down was great. What happened, the Mozilla's response to that was great. They're standing up for civil rights. And for some people, it's... that even if he stepped down voluntarily and he said, look, I don't want to submit Mozilla to any more damage, blah, 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 blah. Some people are going to see it as Mozilla responded to internet bullying. I've seen that's the two reports that I've seen primarily. But I mean, Jeremy, you say that they didn't handle it particularly well. I can't see any other way in which they could have handled it, because I think in those kinds of situations, you can either handle a shitstorm by either providing clarity or you can basically provide silence, right? And silence is the approach that a lot of companies take because they think it'll blow over. And I think Mozilla just thought it'll blow over because any clarity that they would have provided, they would have been attacked.
But I don't think they chose clarity or silence. I think they chose a middle ground, which was to muddle things and be more confusing than anything. They didn't choose silence.
Well, there was that kind of bullshit apology, right? And
I think the disappointing thing here is this could have been an opportunity, right, to bring someone who is a highly skilled and respected technologist. I mean, the guy wrote JavaScript, right? He was a founder of the project and someone who's clearly done a lot for the open web, which I think is important to all of us. And we could have brought him to the side of being informed and hopefully supporting gay rights, because I think if you think about it long enough and reason, that is the side that most people will come down on, religion aside, and it could have been an opportunity to have a conversation. And I think that conversation would have been beneficial to a lot of people, and that conversation just simply didn't happen.
I totally agree with Jeremy.
Gee, I could go for some kale. But I think the thing is that...
it is so difficult to take you seriously with that.
It really is.
Some people have... thanks, Brian. People have said, you know, is him stepping down a declaration that he considers his views on his opposition to gay marriage to be more important than fulfilling his, being CEO? And the thing is that arguably, I don't know if it got to that. Like, I get the impression that he is a guy who could just put his political perspectives to one side when functioning as a CEO.
Agreed.
But I agree with you, Jeremy, that he could have engaged in a dialogue. Like, what happened with the Chick-fil-A situation was kind of similar, right? There was a shitstorm surrounding Dan Cathy. And anyway, he ended up having meetings with some guy who runs a gay rights group. And there was a lot of conversation. And that was handled much better, I think. But
I mean, there's a certain kind of begrudging respect for his integrity in that clearly the easy way out of this would be to say, no, that's how I thought, but I've changed my mind since. And he didn't do that.
Nope.
He didn't back away from his viewpoint. Equally, he didn't stand up and attempt to defend his viewpoint. He did a non-apology apology, a kind of, it's not a problem, without disavowing any of the views and without actually reaffirming the views, because that would be bad PR, which is, I think, why it's spun out of control. But I'm not sure that's a Mozilla board issue so much as I can absolutely imagine Brendan saying, well, I'm not disavowing any of my viewpoints, but equally, I don't want to spend the rest of my life having this massive fight. I'd rather just take myself out of it. Like, you know, the Flappy Bird guy who pulled the game from all the app stores, even though it was pulling in 50,000 notes a day, because he just couldn't bear the fact that he was getting death threats on Twitter at the rate of about one every 3 seconds or something. He just thought, you know what? The hell with this. I just want to get away from it all. And I can see Brendan thinking that.
That's ridiculous.
What's ridiculous?
Yeah, I mean, the Flappy Bird guy got death threats.
What was that, Jono?
For making I could go for some kale. The Flappy Bird guy got death. Thank you. Got death threats.
Flappy
Bird.
Yeah.
He certainly got an infinite amount of hassle. People going, man, this game's so hard. I hate you. And at first, you'd hear that and you think, well, you know, okay, whatever. But if you're in, all your social networks become completely unusable to you because it's just full of people saying, why did you make this game so hard? You're ridiculous. You don't know what game programming is. Why is this popular? I hate you. I can see you thinking, you know, what the hell with this? And the fact that he walked away from a dump truck full of money is...
This segment rapidly turned into a Flappy Bird segment, I'll say that.
Yeah, so...
Oh, yeah.
So just bringing it back to Brendan Eich for a second. Yeah. So I think actually what Jeremy was saying earlier was kind of spot on. This is a missed opportunity from Mozilla to have a dialogue, to have a conversation, and not just about, you know, gay rights and gay marriage, but about the openness of companies, the ability for companies to foster people with multiple political and religious viewpoints. This was an opportunity for a company that espouses itself to be the open source, open dialogue, open web company to really embrace that and have an open dialogue in an open web. And they completely failed to do that.
I think that's the problem. Conflating Brendan Eich and Mozilla too much.
No, well,
Mozilla shouldn't just, you know, stick him out there on an ice floe on his own and go, you made the comments, now you've got to defend them, we're not going to help you.
Yeah, but equally, in your shit bath, yeah. No.
Well, yeah, but equally, I think saying, well, you know, it would be good of Mozilla to have that kind of discussion. I think part of the thing is that largely the Mozilla Corporation don't need to have that kind of discussion because
they're not the ones
that everyone had a problem with. People who are boycotting Mozilla on the basis of something that their CEO did, I think we're going way too far.
Well, no, see, that's the thing. Mozilla as an entity felt the need to respond to all of this, and they responded. They just responded in such a way as to not promote a dialogue or a discussion about it. They responded in a very kind of middling ground that kind of they didn't really go one way or the other, like Jeremy was saying. And I think that's just a missed opportunity. And so now when people are looking at it, they're like, oh, okay, not only does Mozilla hire people to be the CEO who are against gay rights, but they also axe people because they're against gay rights, and also they don't have dialogues. It's just a missed opportunity all around.
Gee, I could really go for some kale right now. But I think this gets back to what I was saying earlier on about how what they were doing was, it's classic PR, right? What they were doing is they were trying to shorten the news cycle, right?
But I think we expect more from Mozilla than traditional PR. I think we've come... Mozilla...
Yeah. Well,
This isn't for...
Mozilla isn't Chick-fil-A. That's what I didn't like about all those comparisons, is I don't think you can compare Mozilla, which is in essence a non-profit, to Chick-fil-A.
I think that's exactly the point, though. It's not... You know, typical PR. It's typical bad PR. If you said to people, why do you hate PR? Their answer would be because they try and do non-apology apologies and shorten the news cycle without actually addressing any of the issues. And part of the thing there is that Mozilla and Canonical and a bunch of other companies who are involved in the open source world basically aren't very good at this stuff.
G, go for Kale. One sentence from everybody. What do you think? What's your overall conclusion of everything that's happened so far with this whole Brenda Nikes thing? Brian, what do you think?
I don't even think I can come up with it at this point. I think in 3 weeks I'll have a conclusion.
Jeremy.
I would agree with Brian that this is definitely not over. I think it's going to probably get worse from here before it gets better. And I think that either Mozilla will use it as a learning opportunity or things in the long term will get worse for them.
Brian Johnson.
I think... I wish. I think Mozilla will be materially worse as a technology company for not having Brendan Eich, but I think he shouldn't have been CEO. So that bit of the outcome is okay.
And I would say, well, sorry, gee, I could go for some Kale. I would say that just the whole situation from every side is just disappointing. Mozilla, Eich, the internet reaction, and I agree, it's not over yet. The first-person shooter gaming genre has been around for donkey's years. Although invariably fun, for me the run-and-gun gameplay always got stale quickly with a repetitive shoot, kill, get killed, respawn cycle. No amount of fancy schmancy graphics and multiplayer tournaments could retain my interest beyond an hour or so. That all changed with Battlefield 4. Back in episode 6 of Bad Voltage, I reviewed the PlayStation 4, and since then the Battlefield 4 disc has been in my console almost permanently. It is also available for PC, Xbox One and 360, and PS3. While Battlefield 4 has a single-player campaign mode, this is really a multiplayer game. In it, you're on the battlefield playing in one of four different roles. Assault, which is typically running and gunning and being a medic. Engineer, in which you can destroy and fix vehicles. Support, that provides heavy firepower and ammo. And Recon, which is essentially sniping. Each role has different primary and secondary weapons and gadgets, and as you play more in each role, you unlock weapons, camos, sights, muzzles, and more. The game provides multiple game modes, but by far the most popular is the huge 64-player Conquest mode. This pits two 32-player teams against each other, with each team having to capture objectives and kill the opposition. In each game, you can play the four different roles I just mentioned, and use tanks, choppers, jets, boats, hovercrafts, and more. The maps are huge, and the vehicles are needed not just for combat, but also from getting from one part of the map to another. Battlefield 4 is an absolute ton of fun. The game is heavily orientated around team play. You have to work with your squad and follow orders to control or defend objectives. If you don't work as a team, well, you lose. It is also fun issuing an order to take an objective and seeing a battalion of other people attack it with infantry, vehicles, and more. There's something so engrossing about the huge maps and seeing multiple battles happening all around you, all over the map, all driven by real people and real competition. It really is pretty awe-inspiring and makes for some incredible moments. Now, much has been said about the Battlefield 4 technical glitches. Hardcore gamers have beaten DICE and EA with the whinge stick repeatedly about quality. I'm not going to deny that the game has suffered from crashes, rubber banding and bugs in the past, but to be fair to DICE, they've released a series of patches that have resolved pretty much all of these issues. Now, sure, when new downloadable content such as China Rising, Second Assault, and Naval Strike come out, they do have issues with lag, but usually those issues are settled a few weeks later. The thing that really sets Battlefield 4 apart from the rest, though, is how creative of a gamer you can be. For example, spawning into a chopper, using a minigun in that chopper to take out a squad on a roof, before parachuting out when somebody takes out your chopper, and then landing near to them and taking them out with a magnum. That's just one example of the many different moments, techniques, approaches, and overall fun that the game gives you. So, what is the Bad Voltage verdict about Battlefield 4? Battlefield 4 is a breathtaking, creative, strategic adventure that, although shaky when it was first launched, now delivers a first-class shooter that sets it apart from the rest with fun and replayability.
Why haven't you just joined the army? If you like this stuff, you know, if what you like is the teamwork and everything, why don't you actually join the TA or the reservists or something?
I don't like running.
I was going to say, he likes it on screen, right, so but he's not the type of guy that's going to get shrapnel in his ass.
No, I mean, I'm not sure if you could say, look, if you like a video game, that you should maybe join the real world version of that.
Well, no,
you know?
I mean, I wouldn't. If what you said was, what I really like is machine gunning foreign people to death, I would not suggest that you join the army. But if you're like, what I like is working as a team to conquer an objective and stuff, that's what the army does. That's what they're for.
You know, here'd be my response to that. I really dig movies about Wall Street, but I don't want to be a stock trader.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, the thing about it, the thing that I found, like I said earlier on, was the most of the first person shooters are quite boring to me because you just run around shooting people and there's no strategy to it, right? And the thing about Battlefield 4 is not only in terms of working as a team to achieve things, like, I mean, there's something exhilarating about when you and like eight of your teammates are all moving forward towards a target and the maps are all set up differently. So, you know, some of them are out in the open, so your team members are spread all over the place. But some of them, like a good example is one called Operation Locker, where you're basically in a very, very tightly compressed part of the map. So there's like 64 people in a firefight in the same room. And it really gets the pulse going, you know? And that's what I like about it is, you know, to me, video games are supposed to kind of generate experiences, if you will. And I've never experienced anything like that with another first-person shooter. I've played Quake, and I've played Doom, and I've played Wolfenstein,
The art has moved on a bit since Quake and Wolfenstein. Man.
Wolfenstein has nothing on Battlefield 4. Spoiler alert.
So is that what the DLC is? You just get new maps, basically?
Yeah, so they released three so far. The first one was China Rising. The whole thing is kind of set out, is broadly situated, the whole Battlefield 4 franchise is broadly set out in China. China Rising was the most boring of the DLCs because they have something in Battlefield 4, which I didn't mention in the review, which is called Levolution. So, for example, there's one map in the core game with a huge dam. And then partway through the game, the dam collapses. And what it does is it crushes buildings and it, you know, there's all this rubble everywhere. So it kind of reimagines the map. So it, you know, it changes the strategy of how the game operates and you can trigger the Levolution. There was no Levolution on China Rising. And then they released Second Assault, which was some of the maps from Battlefield 3, which have been reimagined using the new Frostbite 3 engine for Battlefield 4, which includes Levolution. And then the most recent one is Naval Strike, which is, you know, boat-based battle.
Boats
which I didn't
shit.
Think would be very... Yeah, which I didn't think was going to be very fun, but Naval Strike is, I would say, is the most fun out of all of them. And you can get Battlefield Premium, which basically gets you access to all of the DLCs. There's going to be five in total. So
nice.
But it's new maps. But it's not my. I always associated maps as being like with Wolfenstein and Doom. It's just, you know, set of corridors. But the maps here are just so complex in the way that they work. They're huge worlds. They're kind of open worlds.
Well, it's nice to discover that when I was playing Pac-Man when I was a very small boy, and sometimes you'd go through, you know, you'd collect a thing and then it would open a little door somewhere, but that's actually called Levolution TM when the map changes while you're playing. I didn't realize it had a cool name, but okay, great.
Wee bit cynical, Mr. Langridge, are we? It's pretty cool. Like a good example is there's one map with this huge tower, and partway through it, you're running around, you know, playing your objective, and then this tower just falls over, and you know, creates, and of course it's broken into these multiple kind of like hollow towery bits. It's like a circular tower, so you can run through those. So again, it creates new compressed spaces where battles can happen. It really does change it, but like the thing about it was, for me, was just how diverse of a game it is. Like, it's not like you're just running around with a gun all the time. There's different weapons, there's different vehicles. Like, you know, being in a jet, you see like almost like a radar view in which you're shooting people on the ground.
You're not just running around with a gun. Sometimes you're driving around with a gun.
So the way you describe it makes it sound a lot like you're playing Second Life with guns.
Yeah, well, this was my point about you know, joining the army was not wholly facetious. What you're talking about is not an experience which ought to be unique to Battlefield 4. The idea of getting a bunch of people together and assaulting an objective or something has been basically the goal of every multiplayer shooter since there were multiplayer shooters. What makes Battlefield 4 good and other ones not good?
Because with most other multiplayer shooters, the objective is to just kill anybody who moves.
Only when you're playing deathmatch, which most of the time right. you're not.
But most, from what I can tell, most of the multiplayer shooters, it's you don't have shared objectives. Like, so for example, you know, in Battlefield 4, you have these lettered objectives, and a squad leader can say which ones you need to attack or defend. And you get points for working together as a team, and that unlocks weapons and things like that when you go after those
I believe that you are wrong about that, but I will look forward to...
The community can clarify.
Community.badvoltage.org. I mean, and explain to Jono all the other millions of games that he doesn't know about yet, which do that.
Because
you might find there's a whole bunch of other games that you'll also really enjoy
playing. I'm sure there's
going to
be other games that do this.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's just to mock you. There may be a whole bunch of games you don't know about.
Okay.
Yet.
All right.
You know, I could actually, like, really could go for some kale right now.
There's a bonus one for you. So my question is, did you get up at like 6:30 like you did for the PlayStation 4 and wait in line for this, or?
No.
I'm still shocked that you did that.
yeah, I got it. This game was one of the main reasons why I wanted to get the PS4, because it looked beautiful on it. And I was watching this, there's this YouTuber called Massive Gaming, who weirdly sounds like Brian. Brian, it's like you and this guy are separated at birth.
Nice.
And he was doing a bunch of, you know, he was just streaming from his PS4 with Battlefield 4. I just thought, that looks like a blast. So, you know, and you can get it for PC and Xbox and whatever else. But as Zach and I talked about when I was at his place in England, you know, I don't really want to spend £1,000 or $1,000 rather on a gaming PC. Like, it looks amazing on it.
Did you buy it on some kind of legacy disc thing, or did you just buy it as a download?
It's on disc. So you can buy it as a download. I mean, but these games are huge. They're like, you know, 40, 50 gigabytes.
So what I hear you saying is, Jono, you like this game, and Stuart, you take objection to that. Straightforward?
Why can't you just let me be happy, Langridge?
Yeah, come on, man. What's your fucking deal, Stu?
You're responsible to the community.
No, I mean, ever since we broke up and I moved to America, right?
Yeah, you become a real
sick. You've never let me be happy. Breakup.
Well, he doesn't cuddle, that's why.
Gentlemen, I think it is imperative that we do another part of our epic series, Breaking Down the Bullshit. I would like Let's to focus it. This time on wearables, because I think wearables are bullshit. So, specifically, I would like to talk about all the various wristbands and glasses and goggles and there's probably a fez out there that's electronic. I don't really know. But I would like to talk about that right now because, again, bullshit. Stuart, I want to direct this at you because I think that you are potentially the guy that is going to buy the most of these. I could see you walking down the street with an epic amount of wearable jewelry on. What is your thoughts on wearables in general? And are there any wearables that you're actually excited about getting, like these little like pebble watches and things that tell you when to have a BM and all those other things? Well, I mean, are you into this sort of thing?
Unfortunately, no, I'm not, because wearables are bullshit.
Oh, sorry, I misunderstood.
I have to say, having gone and looked at the way the market is at the moment, as well as all the bullshit surrounding it, people seem to be discussing people seem to have narrowed the whole concept of wearable stuff down into wristbands, right?
Yeah.
Which are then themselves divided into basic bands, which are things like the, you know, the Fitbit and the Nike Fuel band and stuff like that. Although presumably they'll be bringing out a Nike Fuel Fez any day now.
But,
and then the other end of the thing, you've got smart wearable bands, which is smartwatches stuff, Pebbles, Samsung, presumably an Apple iWatch, which is coming. But no, I mean, I think the Pebble's bloody pointless. I don't get it. I never have understood it. Someone was shilling one to me in the pub the other week. And I just think, why would you buy a watch I said to this guy, why would you buy a watch which you have to charge up every couple of days? This watch I've got on my wrist tells the time brilliantly, and I've never put a new battery in it, and it's 10 years old. And he says, oh, no, but when someone sends me a message, I can just look at my wrist.
No, wait, said, wait, what you're saying is,
took my phone out of my pocket, is,
you do not want your watch to do anything other than tell you the time. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah.
Okay. When you were a kid, I'm going to call bullshit on you, Stu. Bullshit. When you were a kid, you wanted one of those cool Casio calculator watches just like the rest of us because you wanted to go to school and show everyone how you could do calculations on your wristwatch.
I had a calculator watch. I had a Gaiman watch at one point, actually.
Boom.
But
those, my friend, are wearables.
I was a child. And this is what's important.
Seriously,
I've tried Google Glass, and it's very clever from a technological point of view, don't get me wrong. And I can see it being useful to just glance up into the corner of my eye and see a message or whatever. And it certainly makes me less likely to walk into a lamppost than walking down the street reading a book on my phone like I do at the moment. But it feels like they're a solution in search of a problem.
No, wait. Hold on. You just said the problem and the solution, and you made it clear that the glasses were, in fact, the solution to a problem you currently have. So
no,
it seems like
they're absolutely
they
not.
Found
no,
the problem.
No, because the glasses. The glasses are a third of the solution. It's brilliant to be able to look up and see the thing I want to see. How does it know what you want to see? And the answer is, you have to stand there in the street and lovingly stroke the side of it to go through basically a PowerPoint presentation of all the information on the internet until you get to the bit you want. Or you can stand there in the street and, like the biggest spanner in the world, say, okay, glass, show me where I'm standing. At which point everyone will look at you and say, are you mental?
I think the thing is that wearables that do something that you can't do with your phone very conveniently are interesting. So, for example, I think that the Fitbit or the exercise bands are actually pretty helpful because what they do is they provide a means in which people can track how much exercise they're doing and they can set themselves goals and whatever else.
Your phone does that.
Well, yeah, your phone can do that, but if you're going for a run, you don't want to have your phone in your pocket. Right, so they're light enough and convenient enough that people can exercise with them. But I agree with you, Ak, in terms of things like Google Glass. Like, you can basically do that kind of stuff with your phone and not look like a, you know, an unbelievable spanner, you know, wearing these stupid glasses. But I think that will transition over when we get to a point where people can have contact lenses with built-in displays, like when. Because the thing that's missing here in my mind is wearables will only take off when they look cool. And while they don't look cool, no one will buy them in the general market. Like,
yes.
Nerds will buy them. But until they look cool, like my watch, like that my wife got me, I love my watch because A, it tells the time, and B, it looks cool. And Pebble watches don't look cool. No e-watch I've ever seen.
They're getting
cool.
Better though. If you look at the Pebble Steel,
I actually kind of like the way they
look. It now doesn't look like.
Yeah.
Fashion is very personal, right? So yeah. To me, they don't look cool, but
the Pebble Steel doesn't look like basically a 21st century Casio calculator watch. It actually looks a bit more decent, but I agree with you that it's not going to happen until it looks cool. But to me, the big problem is input. No one has worked out how you get these to show something. If they're just purely output devices, it's essentially a version of the screen on your phone that you don't have to take out of your pocket. Who the hell cares? How difficult is it? I mean, you know, this is me talking, right? You know, I'm not going running anytime, but even I can bring myself to the strain of taking my phone out of my pocket, right? It's not that hard.
So I'm going to take a little bit of an alternative viewpoint as you guys hear. I guess Jono doesn't completely seem to think they're bullshit, but Ek and Brian seem to. I think you're going to see a lot of poorly designed wearable products in 2014 and probably a little bit beyond. And because those products aren't very good, there's going to be a temptation to write off the entire category. But while I think the vast majority of current wearables probably will fail, the category itself, I think, will be a resounding, resounding success in the long term. And realistically, probably the devices that succeed will bear little resemblance to the early, basically, experiments that we're seeing now.
Well, I mean, to me,
I think Jeremy's right, and I just want to clarify something. When I say that they're bullshit, I mean that they're bullshit. Not that they won't be successful. Back in the 1980s, people said, "What, this mouse? A mouse for a computer? That's some bullshit right there." Turns out a lot of people like it. Now, I hold that the mice are bullshit. You should be using the keyboard, and it should make loud clicking noises every time you push every single key. And that's how you use a computer. That's just how I roll. Mice are bullshit.
That's how people in our forum like it.
But mice are very, very successful, and they're going to continue to be successful. Touch screens, they're working out well. I think touch screens are some bullshit right there. But I just think wearables are a bit bullshit as well.
Yeah, I mean, to me, they feel... what Jerry says is exactly right, that what we're looking at is the early days of something. But because most of the stuff that you need to make a successful wearable thing isn't in place yet, it means that what you get are half-assed implementations or things which only do one thing and do it well. So the Fitbit, the Nike Fuel Band, whatever, all it's basically an extremely expensive pedometer. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, fine. That's one thing it does well. What it's not is a generic science fiction style, you're always connected, you don't need to carry around a phone sort of device. To me, it's like electric cars are, that you can have an electric car, but until you've got electric charging points on every street corner, they're quite annoying to use, and you've got to think about them. Hydrogen cars are the same. And the wearable stuff is the same.
Electricity is bullshit.
They've solved one of the problems. How do we make
a device
which can record information, maybe display information, and you can wear it on you, and you can charge it once a day. But there's still a bunch of stuff they haven't solved, like how do you do input to it? How do you make the batteries
I'm not clear on why you think they're going to have all the problems solved in the first generation of devices, right? That doesn't make sense to me. You're expecting them to go from 0 to 100 instantly. I think fitness devices are a good option for first generation for wearables, right? Because the functionality is simple. The functionality is well-defined. It's a functionality that really isn't performed well by current generation smartphones, and the benefits are kind of easily understood. And you can do so with reasonable battery life, which is a good first generation. You're expecting it to be the future with no iterations to have gotten there.
Yeah, no, Jeremy is absolutely right.
Maybe what's bullshit
is
your expectation of a new product category.
No, disagree. The idea that something will record the steps that you've taken has been satisfied perfectly well by pedometers that cost $2.75 for the last 10 years.
No, Jeremy is right. We can't expect the first generation to solve all the issues. It takes a long time for it to become useful and interesting. A good example of this is Ubuntu. Look at how many years it's been going, and it's still a little bit crap.
The first now, time you sang AC/DC in the shower, it didn't sound as good as it sounds now, did it?
Now, Brian, from one typhoon of bullshit to another typhoon of bullshit, get ready, right? In my mind, what's going to happen with wearables, where they're going to really start happening, is when we weld wearables with the Internet of Things, right? For this magnificent typhoon of bullshit.
That's
because
what's going to
happen is
begin.
That when wearables can... That's when we're going to explore vertical markets and leverage synergy. Because when things that are connected to your body, I think, can connect to things that surround you in your everyday life, I think that's when we're going to start... seeing interesting combinations of data. I think the wearables will become a source of data that will feed into other things that surround you as well. We already have, in a very low budget kind of capacity, the thing about the Fitbit, the fact that the Fitbit communicates data to their website, and that's where you consume the information, I think is an interesting example of that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that to me is when I agree with Jeremy, like we're only just at the beginning of this, and it's going to be crap for a while, and then it's going to probably get good.
Okay, would we all agree... which we may well do. I think we might all agree on this, that they're bullshit now, but they're going to get better.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm still probably going to buy some, though.
I was going to say, I own a couple, and I think we're just getting to the point that they're not complete and utter bullshit now, and the next couple of years, they will make significant improvements.
What's the scale? Is it total bullshit, bullshit, shit?
No, I don't think so.
I think it is surprising bullshit.
Awesome.
But yeah, so we're agreed that they're bullshit now. I mean, to me, it feels like they're trying to oversell what they do, but they'll get better.
So one thing we have in every show is our community recap, which is where we look at stuff in the forums. We community.badvoltage.org. We have a really fantastic community that's forming around there. Lots of different ideas and opinions, not just feedback on the show, but people talking about other stuff as well. And then, of course, we have the IRC channel. If you go to badvoltage.org/IRC, you can hang out with people in real time. So, without further ado, we're going to summarize a couple of things that are going on here. So, Brian, do you want to get started?
Absolutely. I'll start off with the least controversial and least offensive thing happening in this review segment, and that is that we've got some gaming rescheduled for April 19th at, oh, dear Lord, the time is in UTC, 19.00 p.m. UTC, whatever the hell that means. I don't know what time that is, but there's going to be gaming going on. Go to community.badvoltage.org. There's a gaming thread in there, they'll give you more information. We're doing Team Fortress 2, right?
Yeah, Team Fortress 2 on Steam, and 1900 UTC, so that's 7 p.m. UTC, which is 12 p.m. Pacific, which is 3 p.m. Eastern. And that's
did you just do that all off the top of your head, or did you use software to do that?
8 p.m. London, England, and then 9 p.m. Europe. No, that time was 22 minutes ago. As we're recording right now, I'm just looking at my
phone. I was going to say, John O'Bacon, time zone wizard.
Powerful.
So, continuing on the non-offensive
topics.
Oh, go ahead, Eck. Yeah. That's a really...
No. I was just going to say, that's a really... If you were going to be a wizard, that's a really poor choice of wizardry. In my opinion.
Dude, I totally disagree. I think that's a bitchin' wizard thing.
Bitchin' wizard. .com.
Continue on the non-offensive topics. A reminder that we have a bunch of people writing either iOS or Android or even Ubuntu apps. And if you have any feedback on those or would like to help or would like to use those, head over to community.badvoltage.org and there's a thread for each one of those. Or if you have a suggestion for an app that isn't one of those three categories, let us know.
We've also had a bunch of emails. People can email us at show@badvoltage.org. I would say we like getting emails, which is cool, but quite often you'd be better off bringing up the discussions on community.badvoltage.org on the forum, because then other people can get involved. And if you send a really long email, like one chap did here, then we're not going to read it all out because it's just huge. But first of all, Gary Adamson sent us an email. He's been listening to back episodes of the show, and he has a question, which I think you could all address in one sentence. He says, with XP now end of life and the world's finances still in a mess, could this be... Are you ready for this? Are you ready for this? Could this be the year of Linux on the desktop? What do you think?
Obviously. I thought, isn't every year the year of Linux on the desktop?
Yeah. It's been on my desktop for donkey's years.
Yeah, donkey's years.
Actually, man, what is donkey's years?
Points out.
Yeah, I don't know either.
You don't know what donkey's years?
No idea.
No, I mean, I know based on how it feels in my heart, but I've never heard that before.
No.
And oh, really? Is that an English thing then? I know what it is.
I know what it is. I mean, it's...
Okay.
Donkeys have longer years than we do.
Is this kind of like being a spanner?
Well known. Spanner is definitely an English term. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Do we even have spanners in America, by the way?
Can you have a donkey?
They have wrenches.
Yeah, we have wrenches.
Wrench, right.
Donkey.
Yeah, we got wrenches.
Donkey spanner. Okay. Anyway, right. Back at the point.
So back at the point. Gary Adamson, he points out that he's MS certified on XP and 2003 server, but his next machine will be running Mint and so on. Now, the question of is this year the year of Linux on the desktop has been addressed every year since about 1994, and the answer has always been, you know what? No, it isn't. But maybe this year will be it. Be interested in your thoughts.
There's never going to be a single year when everyone's just going to suddenly move to Linux on the desktop, but I'd say that every year it continues to get more and more adoption. And XP's the end of life of XP is going to help there, no doubt about it. So, but there's not going to be like 1 year when everyone's going to be like, okay, everyone with Mac and Windows, just throw it in the bin, install Ubuntu or Mint or Fedora, probably not OpenSUSE though.
I certainly agree that XP ending is going to help Chromebooks. Anyway, you guys had the discussion about about the first half of the Brendan Eich saga last week, and we had a couple of emails about it. In general, and I'll summarise the emails without necessarily mentioning the names, people taking opposition to your viewpoints, normally from the point of view that... let me quote one of the emails. One chap says, I'm a conservative, brackets, not a Republican, close brackets. And I'm going to take a side with the guy with the British accent, who I assume is Jono, although he disagrees with all of Jono's politics. He says, it's Nazism to fire him based on his convictions in his personal life. Gay marriage and civil rights are two different issues. Do your homework. I don't think I can listen to any more of your show. It's a shame. I got to stick to my values. And we had a very long email laying out...
Wait, hold on a second. I want to respond to him here. I'm not going to call him up by name because I would think that would be rude. I'm just going to call him Timmy Wimmy. Timmy Wimmy, here's the issue I take with your email. One, I think that if you are offended by something we say, that you should absolutely stick to whatever values you want and simply not listen to the show. Kind of like when people take offense to something that the Mozilla board does or that the CEO of Mozilla does, they simply stop using Mozilla's product. Now, that's kind of exactly the same thing. What you are suggesting is you disagree with our politics, therefore you boycott us. So just to point out that you are doing the exact thing that you are claiming is Nazism. Continue.
I was going to say, like, just to dip in that for a second. I mean, I don't think any of us would ever, Timmy, I don't think any of us would ever want to tell you that you shouldn't think the way you do and you shouldn't have the values and the perspectives that you have. But I would, not that you should care what I think, I would caution against saying I'm not going to listen to things that challenge my views, because that's how bad things happen. That's how the world gets into a state where we only have a single set of ideas and we don't have diversity of discussion and debate and everything else. So, you know, if you choose that you don't want to listen to the show because you don't like it and because we say things that you don't like, then so be it. It's your choice. But I think that that would be a shame, because some of the best things in the world are when people challenge our viewpoints and we have interesting discussions. And that's the whole point of Bad Voltage, is that we try to cover things and then we can continue those discussions on the forum. The discussion that we've had on the Bad Voltage forum about Brendan Eich, we've had a hugely different set of ideas there. It's all been very respectful, and I think it's made everybody think about things a little differently. Anyway, go on. Actually.
Plus, I just want to add to this, Timmy Wimmy. Go back, if you are listening to this show, and check out the one we did on gun control. I think you will find that a good chunk of the Bad Voltage crew are oddly more conservative than you might actually think. So I just want to throw that out there as just a little something to check out.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had an email on a similar topic and from a similar viewpoint, but at considerably more length. Again, I'm not going to name the sender, but he specifically calls out Brian. He says, Brian continues saying, honestly, it's not that much different than, say, having someone appointed to the CEO who's opposed to black people being allowed to vote, and then says this is outrageous. That idea is being propagated by homosexual rights activists, but the Bible condemns illicit behaviour, not skin colour. Some people are simply outraged because others refuse to say homosexual relationships are holy matrimony. It's interesting. I can see how someone who holds a religious viewpoint is loath to weigh into this discussion on the grounds that it's basically it's a whole discussion about someone who held a religious viewpoint and was dogpiled. Earlier on when we talked about Brendan Eich, one of the things that I believe I would have liked to see him do was stand and defend his viewpoint. I can see why he didn't. I can see why he thought, you know what, it's just not worth the misery this is going to cause in my life having to stand and fight for this. But we've had a couple of emails here from people who obviously hold these views strongly, and I'd love to see people get into the discussion a bit more. Now, we've had a pretty vibrant discussion on the whole Brendan Eich topic at community.badvoltage.org, and if those of you who are approaching this from a religious point of view, if any of you are interested in laying out that view and defending it against the others, I respect your desire to do so. And I'd be interested in having that discussion.
Yeah, there was actually somebody who posted some, I can't remember who it was, on the forum. I think it might have been Old Geek, who said, look, it says in the Bible, he said, I'm a man of faith, I'm a Christian, and it says in the Bible homosexual acts are sinful, or whatever the description was. I can't remember exactly the specific syntax. And he said, you know, and I posted and responded and said, look, I think we just need more respect in the debate because, and to be fair, people on the Bad Voltage forums have been tremendously respectful. I mean, in
oh, general yeah. terms. Awesome people.
Like, I think there's, in my mind, like, people who are Christian and they believe that what is written in the Bible is their moral code, then we should respect people for that perspective. The issue in my mind is, that's fine. We should, like, live and let live. But where it gets sticky is when we're talking about other people not being allowed to do things because a different person has a set of ideas and perspectives. And that seems to be where a lot of the kind of the debate has been kind of orientating around on the forum. But I'd agree with that. Like, go and join the discussion. Like, emails are good that come to us, but we can't read them out. And then you don't get the benefit of a wide and diverse set of ideas. And we have a really diverse community. We have a lot of conservatives. We have a lot of Christians. We've got a lot of liberal people, a lot of atheists. Like, we just have a real diverse group of people. Send your comments there.
This episode, as always, we choose to end it. We choose to stop recording it. We choose to do it no longer, at least for the next 2 weeks. And there is a good reason for that. The first reason is that I've got to pee. And the second reason is that I'm pretty confident, based on the look on Stuart's face in the video chat we're doing right now, he needs to do something similar. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank everyone for tuning into Bad Voltage, but we do have to pee. Go to badvoltage.org, go to community.badvoltage.org. Those are all the different sites. Are there anything else, any other things that we need to tell them before we go pee?
Why didn't you pee before we started recording this?
I did. My bladder is like the size of a walnut, man. I got to pee like every hour and a half, like clockwork. It just has to happen.
Should maybe get that looked
at. Even if I don't drink anything. Like, I absorb moisture from the air, and then boom, an hour and a half later, I got to go.
Wow, you're like the world's worst transformer. I have a question. Jeremy.
Is there a transformer that has that power?
Jeremy, is your middle name really Barbara?
Obviously not. I didn't even hear him say that. That's Jono's version of comedy, I guess. I'm not sure what was going on there.
Oh, gosh.
Ooh, I thought it was delightful. I thought it was delightful.
Right. I'll literally right. change well, it if you guys would
you
like.
You know what? I
would like. Thank you.
Yes.
Actually,
thanks.
If yeah, I ever that. Lose one of the challenges, yeah. I'll legally change it.
Really?
That's, you heard no, it here first. Really. The next challenge. Really?
I think this is legally binding. It's in a podcast, dude.
No, it's if it was said in a podcast, it
legally
must be
binding.
True. Yeah, that's the 71st Amendment.
All right, is there anything else we need to tell people?
No, thank you for listening. Go and take part in the discussion on community.badvoltage.org, and we'll see you in the next couple of weeks.
But seriously, everyone, give me like 5 minutes before you jump into the discussion, because this might convert into a number 2.